from him or from it. We'll also read some nice stories about how the qualified student is able to derive enlightenment from other than human beings. There's a story in the Upanishad. And therefore, we'll come back to this qualification again and again and again and again. Qualification is not something which is in the beginning. To a qualified student, Guru is enlightenment itself. So, you start off as student and teacher. I am a student, you are my teacher. You teach me a skill, I am learning it. You teach me the Upanishads, I learn it from you. You teach me Vivek Chudamani, I learn it from you. You are my teacher. The words become more and more clear. The concepts become more and more clear. That's all. There is a sort of intellectual entertainment or embellishment. After listening to you, after being your student for some time, I am able to go and converse with them and they think I am a clever man. That sort of thing. Then I say that he was my teacher and so I learnt it very properly from him. This is one. The guru is something different. No words may be exchanged. One look. You have taught me no skill, nothing. Physically and intellectually and psychologically, I return from a visit to you as much a dumb and foolish person as before, but enlightened. Something deep within me has been touched by something deep within you. That's all. So, I think I prefer to make this distinction. It may be purely my idiosyncrasy. It is said that the teacher might test the student in order to see if he is mature enough, if he is ripe enough, if he is qualified to receive the light. It is possible to view it in that light. It's possible. I'm not contradicting that. But it is also possible to view it from another angle. What is seen superficially as a test may itself be a training. This was a constant problem for some of us in the ashram in Rishikesh. I was told, even when I was new there, I was told that some Shivananda might give me something, some sweet or some kind of nice cloth. And if I accept, some seniors, Swamis used to say, oh no, you have failed. Why have you failed? He gave it to me, I took it. Why have you failed? Oh no, the guru will test you and you must say no. I said no, sorry. Then again the whole problem is on me. I am going to say, do you mean it? It looks ridiculous. I mean, it's sort of insulting. He gives it to me, I'll take it, put it. Once or twice, thrice, he tests me and he finds out that I'm going to do exactly what he says. Then he better change. He better be careful next time. It's a training. It's not so much a test. Please, I'm not trying to contradict the other theory. It's quite possible that such things exist. There is a lovely little story in the Katha Upanishad. The Upanishad itself is in the form of a story. There was a holy man and he had a son called Nachiketas. And the father performed a big religious ceremony. These religious ceremonies used to be very frequently performed in India, and now they are going into disuse. One of the rules connected with this ceremony was that the performer should give away everything he had, especially those he was fond of. That was the discipline. You give away all that you are really fond of, so that you develop the spirit of non-attachment. I don't know if you are familiar with the bankruptcy laws here. People, when they want to apply for bankruptcy, they usually hand over all their valuables to the wife or to their children and then file for bankruptcy. Huh? So that I don't really lose anything. I cheat the creditors, but I really don't lose anything. And perhaps that's what he did. He gave away all his the cows and the property that he had to his wife and others. And all the decrepit old cows, the cows were the main objects of gift in those days. And he gave away all the decrepit old cows to the Brahmins as charity. These are all the things I have, all of them you can have. He had a little son called Nachiketa. He went up to his father and he says, first he thought, this son reflected over the whole ceremony, and he said, "My God, my father is giving away in charity cows which are more a liability than a asset. Why is he doing that? It's sin." It is sin to give in charity that which is useless to the other person. It's a burden on the other person. "Right, let me see." So he went up to his father and said, "Father, are you fond of me?" "Yes." "To whom will you give me?" "The scripture says that you should give away all that you are fond of. You are fond of me. To whom are you going to give me?" A very innocent question, childlike question, maybe. First, he thought, "This is what a silly question. People don't give their sons away in charity." Once, twice, and then thrice, the boys continued to nag the father himself. And he must have yelled at him, "Go to hell!" And that is very nicely presented in the Upanishad. Mrtyuvet vam dadamiti. I give you to hell, to death. I give you in charity to death. But such was the power of the ceremony that he had been performed, that the words proved true. And the boy immediately went away to hell. That's the story. Probably he was, shocked, and he walked away from the father. And probably he was fasting for 2 or 3 days. It's possible. I mean, the story is that the father said, "I'll give you to the god of death." And the story is, so the god of death. And he found the god of death was absent from his palace. And so he waited outside for 3 days, which may mean, in simple words, that he banished him and that the son was cross. He walked away, and for 3 days he fasted, didn't eat, and came to death's door. That's what we say, don't we? Huh? That's precisely what the Upanishad says. And of course it is translated literally to mean that the boy went to the kingdom of death and found death absent there. Death is never absent from anywhere. Is that right? When the time comes, death is never absent from anywhere. And when the god of death eventually meets this young boy, he says, "You are a lovely, radiant Brahmin boy, and you have been fasting outside my doorstep these 3 days. And the beautiful ethical teaching is introduced here. If a person, if a guest remains without being attended at your door, you lose all your merit. So I am frightened." This is a lovely little interlude, ethical teaching. If you keep a guest starving at your door, you lose all your merit. So he says, "Please, sir, would you choose 3 boons which I shall grant you in atonement for the sin I have committed?" And Nachiketa says, "Right, it's a good idea. You grant me a boon, I'll take it." 3, yes? So, 1, 2, 3, worked it all out in his own mind, little mind. And he said, "First, my father was very cross when I left him. And when I return from you, grant that he would have lost his impatience and anger, and he would receive me with a pleasant heart." That's granted. Done. Number 2. He had some doubts about some rituals. And he asked some questions, and Yama gave him, the god of death, gave him proper instructions. Right. Second, disposed of. Now third, the last, final. Yeyam prete vichikitsa manushe asti tyeke nayam asti tchaike. You know, I'm small. I'm really not interested in this. But I've heard people discuss death and what comes after. Some people say that after the physical death, something survives, and some people say nothing survives. There were these materialists even in those days. They have never been absent. Who said that a man dies and he is cremated, nothing remains? That's all. Ashes, he'll leave you pitiful of ashes. What else can remain? Does this come back as a man again? Silly nonsense. Forget it. They were the materialists, Charvakas they were called. They said nothing. You are nothing but the body. That was their contention. You are nothing but the body. The so-called spiritual people said that the body is a sort of appendage that you are wearing, your dress that you are wearing, a garb that you are wearing, that you are distinct from the body. These were the two diametrically opposite schools of thought. And this young boy says, "Only you know." It's a beautiful thought if you contemplate this. Who on earth is able to declare with certainty what survives death? Death. Nobody else knows. And so perhaps the Upanishad dramatizes the whole thing by introducing death as the teacher. You cannot ask this question of anybody else. Only death can answer it. And so Nachiketas goes to the god of death and asks this question. Is it a story? Perhaps not. We also should go to the death's door and knock there and ask, now. If that is possible, that's a qualification. Is that possible? Is it possible for me now, knowing that death is there everywhere here, right now, right here, can I knock at the door of death, die to myself, and see what remains? That's what, in effect, it amounts to. Though the whole story is couched in lovely, beautiful terms. It's a lovely story, lovely little story, that a young boy goes to somewhere outside, to the abode of death, and asks the question. The question concerning life and death, what is and what survives, can only be asked of death, and the answer can only come from death. Nobody else can answer this question. But death is not something which occurs at one point in your history, in your biography. It happens every day. Can I die now and ask now? Can I go to this God of death now, right now, die to myself right now, completely and totally, and ask this question? Yeyam prete vichigitsa manushye asti tyeke nayam asti tyeke. Some say there is and some say there is not. What is the truth? The young boy says, tell me decisively, what is the truth? Now, if you enact it within yourself now, you will see the whole story not as a myth or a legend, but as a psychological truth, a spiritual truth that is happening to you, to me now, right now. And out comes the reply from death. Hey, little boy, what do you think? You are looking for chocolate. This is not chocolate. This is not toy. You are not toying with it. You are not playing with this. This is something serious. And the God of death says, forget this question. Who is saying this? Your own ego is saying this. Forget this. Eat, drink and be merry. Why bother about soul and self-knowledge and death and after and before and all this? Who am I? Forget it. Have some chocolate, ice cream. Your own self, your own ego is saying this all the time, now, right now. That's what the story says. Yama tells Nachiketas, forget this question. Ask for anything else. You want a long life? Ask for it. You want celestial girls? Ask for it. You want lovely chariots and cars and what have you? Ask for it. I'll give you anything. But don't ask about death. And Yama says something very interesting. Even the gods do not know this. Even the gods do not know this. And even they are eager to know. What are you trying to unravel this mystery for? In Vedanta, in Indian mysticism, it is said that gods are the intelligences that preside over the senses. What are gods? Devas. Devas are those intelligences, or those aspects of intelligence, whichever way you like, that preside over all the senses. And even the senses are baffled, and they do not know what death means and what survives this death. If you inquire, with what do you inquire? You cannot inquire with your senses. Your senses are useless. Your mind is useless. Your intellect is useless. Because all these things are unable to approach this truth, self-knowledge, and are baffled. So he says, don't try to unravel this mystery, which means your ego is resisting self-knowledge, saying, what is the use of all this? Let's have a nice time. Who is worried about death? It's still far away. But this young boy, this particular part of the story is considered to be Yama, the guru, testing the student educators. It may not be, it may be training. It may be making him harder, work hard. I'll place all these, reject them and you go straight, head on, straight towards the destination. The young Nachiketa says, that's okay, that's very good. I do not want all this. Why? As long as there is the certainty of death, putting an end to all this, I don't see any great fun. They are fun, they are pleasant, and they give pleasure, right? But when I remember that death quickly puts an end to all this, they don't seem to be terribly interesting. So keep all these with you. Tell me, give me the answer to this simple question. Who am I? What am I? It is this question itself that is the answer. The question itself produces, gives rise to discrimination, wisdom. The question itself gives rise to wisdom. The question itself gives rise to dispassion. And the question itself gives rise to every kind of virtue you can think of. And the question itself is intense, keen yearning for liberation. All these are considered sadhana chatushtaya, the fourfold means for liberation. But they are also at the same time signs of enlightenment. The guru is not testing but training. Training the disciple. So that as you get deeper and deeper into this quest of self-knowledge, you need greater and greater concentration, greater and greater intensity. Right? It's not a superficial toying with ideas and notions, where you can pick up a couple of them and drop a couple of them. No, when you get into it, you are in it. Do you have the zeal, the enthusiasm, the determination to go through with it? In order to generate this enthusiasm, the teacher pushes you into it. Shows you all the other things and points out that these are no use, gone. Go forward with greater intensity, with greater zeal. And so all these, the importance of a scripture, the importance of a teacher, and the importance of all these virtues, all these are interlinked and interrelated in this quest for self-knowledge. Tomorrow we shall discuss the qualifications.